Father, we're just so grateful for the day that you've given us, for new mornings, new mercies, and new momentum. And Lord, life moves fast. And so we seek your guidance. We follow you. We're listening. And we just ask that you elucidate the things that are important to those in the room. We love you, Father. In Jesus' name I pray, amen. Well, every generation is handed a set of tools and a test. I think there would be agreement in the room that artificial intelligence is one of the most powerful tools that we have ever been handed, and it's also one of the most formative. Scripture reminds us that a man's heart plans his ways, but the Lord establishes his steps. As leaders, we plan, we build, we innovate, but we're also accountable for the direction that these tools take us, and I would argue, most importantly, the way they shape the people around us and in our care, custody, and control. AI is not only changing how we work, but it is changing, as we speak, how people think, decide, and lead. And so here's the reality that I had to come to terms with. AI is not just a productivity tool. That's where I was 2 or 3 years ago. But it's a formative force. And leaders, like all of us in this room, don't get to opt out of formation. Formation also requires more than just intelligence. It requires wisdom. And so that is the lesson that has been reinforced to me over and over and over on my AI leadership journey. And so what I want to share with you today is what actually happened when I decided to lean in to this thing called AI, and rather than stay on the sidelines. So what actually happened? Well, if I could summarize it in 5 words, it would be vision, then fear, then governance, then trust, and eventually we got to adoption. And so I'm going to walk you through each of these, my reality. And before I go any further, I have a question for each of you. How many of you in this room would say I use AI every day as a part of my life? There you go. That's why you're sitting in this room, right? Now, research would say across the United States, about 19% of Americans are using AI every single day. It's just a natural part of their life. And we're seeing AI move from just a workplace or work tool to a life formation tool. And there's a lot of research that is now confirming that it has made that journey. Why this conversation, and as leaders, us leaning into this idea of how it forms people is so important. So by the raise of your hands, that's exactly why having this conversation matters. And people are already using the tools. Even if you don't offer those tools in your workplace, people are using them. They're using them for work, and then they're bringing them into the workplace. So I think the hardest part, I get asked, well, what was the hardest part of, you know, your AI journey? And I would say it this way. The hardest part of AI wasn't the technology. Yes, there were challenges. There were things we had to overcome. And as we continue to build and create, that is the case. But it was really that bottom of the slide. It was leading people through uncertainty without surrendering our values or vision. And there was more pressure on the values and the vision and the uncertainty than there was on the actual technology. And so that's where the real work began. And, you know, we chose to engage AI because I saw it as a chance to change the way people interacted with our brand. I'm a leader at MediShare. We're in the healthcare space. And I looked at that and said, wow, you know, this is a significant opportunity, opportunity for us to change the game. The other thing that was really apparent was, yes, we always seek speed when we think about AI. That tends to be a conversation that comes up a lot. How do I do this faster and better and more efficient? But for us, it was really, how do we educate better? How do we inform more clearly? I'm in the world of healthcare, the most misunderstood vertical or sector, I think, in the United States. Missy spoke at the opening session about a broken system. Yeah, I have stories. You have stories, right? So we saw this as a really interesting opportunity to try and educate people about this thing called healthcare and MediShare. The other thing that we saw as an opportunity was to change the way people use technology. And what I mean by that is you as a consumer, a digital consumer, you go to a website and have a linear experience. You go from A to B to C, and we saw AI as a way to open the door to a conversational experience and move beyond how people typically operate. We know that as digital consumers, you go to a site or a digital landscape and you're to intuitively understand where to go and what to know. And that doesn't always happen. And when it doesn't happen, you go to the lowest denominator, common denominator, which is price. And that leaves a lot to be desired. And so from a responsibility and stewardship perspective, we saw AI as a chance to educate better, inform more clearly, and we saw it as a big opportunity. And so if we didn't engage AI intentionally, I'm not necessarily a FOMO person, but we all have some of that. I really saw when I talked to our CEO and our leadership team, I said, listen, we can make the choice to sit back or stew on it that much more, but unintentionally we are going to be, I think, left behind at some point. So, you know, we made a deliberate decision and we decided to start here. And that was to start with prospects, not internal systems, not sensitive member data, not core operations. Why? Because a lot of the data was already public facing. About 60% of the knowledge base that we were going to build our AI platform with was already public facing. And so that helped with governance, with security. It helped us get out of the gate and take that first step a little easier. But it didn't do one thing. It didn't remove fear. It did not remove fear. And so what we found was organizational fear is real and much bigger and much deeper than I first realized when we really dove in and began this journey. And that's really what surprised me the most. It wasn't the AI or what we were able to do or what we're continuing to be able to do and think about and build. It was the fear. People did not see the agentic AI agent, Grace, as a software tool or as an AI tool. They saw Grace as an employee. In fact, I had leaders holding Grace and how she performed, what she said and what she did, to a level of accountability that was higher than the humans that were on their team. It was a really interesting conversation internally. And there, of course, were fears about job displacement, loss of control, ethics. We're a faith-based organization, so even about Grace speaking about faith So it created a lot of really good conversations. The organization wasn't asking, well, will this work or does it work? We were able to demonstrate that. But what they were really saying is, can I trust this? And it wasn't just the agentic AI build out that we were doing, but they were asking that about other tools. All the tools that you use, you're noticing, all now have an AI component. Some good, some horrible, but it's finding its way into everything. And so it's just creating a lot of consternation that, quite frankly, I didn't personally appreciate early in the journey, because I like tech and I like new. So that was a really big deal. And so what we, where I want to share with you transparently is what we got wrong early on in the process was the fact that we underestimated the level of testing that we needed to do. Now, we have an agentic AI agent. It has a lot of capabilities beyond your typical chatbot that none of us really care for or like. And it's going to be speaking on behalf of the organization. It's going to talk about healthcare and a lot of other things that need to be on point, right? We had done a certain level of testing. And I remember the moment when I had our IT testing team. I said, try and break it. And I almost didn't go there because we had done a lot of testing within our team. And I'd been prompted through a conversation. I was like, you know what? We need to take that step. Well, if I were to read to you what Grace said about leadership, about MediShare, in that moment, my heart skipped about 10 beats because I fast forwarded to the future where I had allowed Grace to go live and to be public, and that what she said is now out there and someone has screenshotted it, or someone in the media, I had a physical reaction. And in that moment, that's really when it drove home. I was like, wow. Man, we have to do a better job around governance. And that's not meant to scare you. It's really meant to just raise your awareness that even if you're using one of what I'll call the open source models, ChatGPT, Anthropic, that there are many out there, right, that you're familiar with. If you're building something or even using the agent feature of the tool, make sure that you've done a certain level of testing, that you are aware as the leader, okay? So I will tell you that forced us to slow down. And this is guidance that I would encourage you to think about if you're actually having or working with a vendor to build an AI agent model that will be interacting with customers or members or employees. And, you know, we found that we were able to jailbreak Grace. We found that after 20 different questions and conversations, we could get her to slowly lose sight of the original question and be swayed over into an area that was none of her business, nor did we want her talking about. And so that's why these are really key things that we worked to put in after quite a bit of conversation and moderation logic, having her watch conversations. And after 3 or 4 turns, if the conversation's beginning to bump up against guardrails we had set, she would move them to a live agent. She would always come back to the first question. And if they were nefarious in nature, which we had built in, we would blow up the conversation. Just like you as a human, at some point, you walk away from a conversation because you know staying in that conversation is not positive. And so we said, okay, we're going to have Grace blow up the convo and start over, erase everything, and start over. And first, we have, I know Dan's in the world of AI. Some of you, you know, may have a fair amount of depth. What's so fascinating is we know every single question that gets asked. We know every single answer that is given back, right? And so, and we categorize it and track. Is it nefarious? Was it jailbreak? And so it's interesting to see. We haven't had a lot of it, but we have had people come in and try from a faith perspective, a political perspective, or a healthcare perspective to try and get Grace to say certain things. And she's held up really well. So we've been excited about that. So, you know, that failure on our part, my part, was really a gift. And I'm so very thankful that God prompted someone to say something that caused me to think, you know what? Because I wanted speed. I wanted to get this in the market. I wanted to get testing. And it was a really great lesson. This slide is simply our original vision for Grace. And these were features, what our goals were. And I'm happy to report that much of that vision was realized. We had our open enrollment period. Our strongest quarter of the year is Q2 for us, which was last quarter. We had about 18,000 conversations happen with Grace. And interesting, they weren't just ask a question, get an answer. They were on average 5 to 6 back and forths. That was the average. The longest, we had about 20% that were 15 or more. So people were coming in and they were learning. They were really seeking answers and trying to better understand. And so we saw increased confidence, stronger brand experience, increased qualified agents or conversations with live agents. So we had 2,000 people either ask Grace to set a Calendly appointment, which she was capable of doing, with a live agent, or they said, yeah, I want to be connected to a live agent. So 2,000 of those. And then 1,000 members came in. They were trying to get just help, just support. And those would have typically been calls to my sales team. That's one of the areas that's part of my world. And because, right, the sales team always answers the phone. The contact center sometimes can't. So 1,000 people got moved over to the contact center. And so we had a lot of success. That is where efficiency mattered. But I will tell you the most important correction, the most powerful correction that we made was not technical. It was human. There was just a lot of consternation, a lot of fear, and I could just see that in the conversations I was getting, the questions I was getting. And so I pulled my team together. I said, we're going to remove the veil. I said, we're going to send a communication to all employees across the country. We're going to give them a heads up, a little deeper heads up about Grace. We're going to re-explain the why. We're going to talk about just a little bit about the progress, and then we're going to invite them into the story. And we provided every employee in the org a link to a ticketing system, and we said, hey, help us help Grace be better. And the organization really rallied around that. They really responded. And I said, ask questions if you have concerns. If you don't like a response, you think a response could be better. And so it really sort of brought transparency to the forefront, lowered the temperature, and it built trust within the organization. The other interesting thing that happened was the internal teams, although it wasn't built for them, the internal teams, our contact center, my sales team, even our leadership team, began to use Grace as an everyday tool because she was comprehensive, she was faster, she was more efficient. And so that's when we knew adoption had shifted and that the organization was now ingesting and beginning to think forward of how can we improve it. And that's really what's allowed us to move forward even faster. This is just our homepage. That's where Grace sits. And so been an a very good learning journey. This is one of several things that we've been doing behind the scenes. And I'll leave you, as far as the personal story, with this phrase. And, I was speaking to some students at a Christian university just maybe 3 weeks ago. And, there was a lot of fear in the room. They feel like they're being left behind. And I said, you really need to understand that it's not who knows how to code. Several of them are vibe coding and doing some of that, and that's great. That's awesome. But really, who will be successful? Leaders who will be successful will be the ones who know how to think, ask better questions, and use AI responsibly to amplify their impact. I would say in the last year, I've noticed conversations, or at least questions, that are beginning to bubble up more about how do I do this wisely? How do I do this responsibly? And I'm glad to see that conversation coming up, because it's certainly been part of my journey as well. So that and what I just shared with you is exactly why I believe we need a framework as leaders to put leadership in front of the technology to help guide what we do, what we develop, how we use the tools. And so that's what I will call the stewardship filter, okay? And this is really before you deploy AI, before you would go on that journey with a tool that you're acquiring, or maybe you've got ChatGPT or Microsoft Copilot at your organization. Maybe it's an internal tool or you're using external. I just encourage you to think about this conversation we'll have here. And just so you know, I can make this available electronically, a broader stewardship filter. It's a leadership guide ready-made for you to take your teams through to create the right types of conversations and thought process around how you, your organization, they, or even as parents, we're allowing AI to enter into our domain, because it has, as we all know. So there's five questions, and we're going to sit in these for a few minutes. These five questions are non-technical because they're all leadership questions. And as leaders, these are the things I think we should be paying attention to. There may be one or two in here where you go, I need to think about that. That's always a good prompting for me to say, that's maybe something I need to spend a little more time on or think about. So encourage you to do that. But the first is authority. This is a big one because, when I began my journey with AI, I wasn't even thinking about who was in control. I was excited about this new tool and what it could do. But at the end of the day, from an authority perspective, is AI advising? Is AI advising, or is it deciding? When you think about how you're using AI today, is it advising you, or are you subtly letting it make decisions? And then you take that decision and you run with it. It's subtle but important. We had to ask ourselves with grace, because of the capability of AI, are we going to allow her to make any decisions? And that list, once we built it out, was very, very small. Grace should not be making decisions about whether Barney is eligible to join MediShare or not. Grace should not be making decisions about whether this medical condition that they've asked about would or would not be something we would share in as a community, right? And so there were a lot of things like that. And so we said, she will always advise. She will almost always advise. And we created those guardrails. And we said, after she advises, she should always offer to escalate over to a human being. And we'll talk about if your approach is human-centric or is it more technology-forward in a second. But that was really a big deal for us as we began to think, what are the guardrails for how she operates? Because she could decide. She could easily decide. And in fact, in the early testing, she was deciding. I mean, she was flat out, pretty close, telling people like what to do, much more black and white. And so we had to soften that. And I would just leave you with, leaders should never outsource authority that they've been entrusted to carry. It's really easy for us to do that. When authority shifts quietly, responsibility erodes quietly as well. And so that's authority. Formation. I see this as really, really big. Every tool forms the people who use it. Did you know your AI has a worldview? Do you agree with that statement? Right? Sam Altman has not put his worldview into ChatGPT. No one has necessarily programmed a worldview into AI, but because AI uses human language and looks at the patterns of human language, and that's really at its essence how it's doing what it does, we all know that human language has values. And so those make their way into how AI responds. So the question isn't whether AI works. The question is, what is AI shaping? How people think, how dependent they become, how creatively they engage with the tool, how they reason morally. So we noticed something interesting. I mentioned this before, that the internal teams began to use Grace. Our sales team, our contact center, our leadership. Our COO came to me one day and he said, man, he goes, I have Grace open on my screen. I use her every day. She has been so helpful to me. And as that began to bubble up, you know, I pulled our team together and I said, you know, are we training better thinking or are we growing dependence in the organization? And so we had a deeper conversation about that. And so we reinforced a simple rule that we've been communicating internally to say, Grace supports your thinking. She does not replace it. As a guide to our leadership and our employees to say, understand the purpose and who's in control, right? Subtle, but important. Leaders are accountable not just for outcomes. I think sometimes, I certainly have done this, I'm focused on the outcome. I am focused on the outcome. I am charging hard towards the outcome. But we're also responsible for who people are becoming. And we, as leaders, from a formation perspective, I mean, you are faithful leaders in this room, and so you come to the table with a kingdom lens, and I think when we do that, we understand formation because we've been formed. We know we're in process of being formed, but the responsibility of leadership around formation is strong. It's strong, and this is an area I think we have to lean into. The third is stewardship. And does this multiply what God has entrusted us to us or quietly replace it? Does it multiply what God has entrusted to us or does it quietly replace it? We did not build Grace to reduce human interaction. We actually had some folks in our organization that came to me and we sat down and they said, hey, you know, with where we're at, we could eliminate all human interaction. And we need to really think about that. Can you imagine the efficiency that we could gain if, you know, and so this conversation ensued and we just said as a leadership team, and I talked to my CEO, I said, man, I am not there. I'm all about efficiency and how we can leverage technology, but I believe we gotta remain human centric. and in how we, not only grace, but other tools that we're bringing to the table. And so that is what we did. So we said, hey, grace's job is to educate, to build, to advise, and to prepare people better for a human engagement. Maybe you can relate to this. You go to a site or you're researching something, and there's something in you that says, I just don't want to talk to someone. So I'm going to live with maybe not quite understanding it the way I would like, because I'm not going to pick up the phone and talk to someone. Maybe you've never done that. I have. And so what we knew was that if we could get people into conversation, which we now have lived out and we're seeing happen, when they have 5, 6, 7 back and forth, that's why folks that we don't believe would have ever moved further got comfortable enough that they were now prepared better. Because why do people not walk in a church door? Why do people not call someone about their health care? Because they don't want to look stupid. They're uncomfortable. They're not sure maybe how to ask the question. And grace helped prepare them better to go, oh, I now know what I really need to know to make a better decision. And so we saw that as really important. Another stewardship decision we made was the actual large language model that we chose to build on. We used the CALM, Kingdom-Aligned Large Language Model. It's a values-driven model by GLU. We have other tools porting into it, but we also saw that being a faith-based organization is really important because it's anchored in biblical authority and truth and privacy. And so that was another stewardship decision. And I would say good stewardship amplifies human gifts. Poor stewardship slowly erodes them, often in the name of efficiency. And we had a lot of pressure around that. Transparency. Can I clearly explain how this is being used? Can you explain how it's being used? And, you know, I shared with you one of the most important decisions we made was removing the veil. And that's when the organization, I think, got it. And they began to, I think, come around and understand, like I already said, so I won't be repetitive, but begin to understand what grace was and what she wasn't. What she was and what she wasn't. And so, you know, I like to say if I can't explain it simply, I shouldn't deploy it confidently in our organization. And I certainly have rubbed up against that guardrail. I've watched other people rub up against it because, you know, Dan had just made a side comment. He's in the world of AI, and he made the comment, it's moving so fast. You know, it's the first time in my lifetime where the entire world went back to kindergarten. And I don't believe anyone, maybe Sam Altman is, or some of the other folks who run the AI companies are out of elementary school. But I think most people, even folks who are spending quite a bit of time with it, are not out of elementary school because the world reset. So as leaders, I would simply share that perspective as a to make you realize that if you feel behind in any way, you are not. I will say in the next 12 to 24 months, if you're not leaning deeper into AI on a regular basis, I do believe that's where we're going to see the gap. We're going to see the gap in leadership, and we're going to see the gap in the tools and what they are capable of doing. But at this point, you know, I'm seeing Rob in second grade and we're on recess and we're playing Foursquare or getting on the merry-go-round and we're sort of back to the basics. So an interesting time to be alive. Finally, a big one's accountability. And I think as all leaders, we understand accountability. We are fiduciaries, right, for our organizations. But we're also fiduciaries. We're accountable for our people, like we talked about. And I explained to you that moment where my heart sank, and that's really where this idea of accountability, I know accountability, I understand it, I employ it, both to myself, to my team, to my life. However, I would say it this way, that sometimes it's easy from an accountability standpoint to say it's the tool or it's something else. But if something goes wrong, no one's going to go to grace and say, you're on probation, right? And it's not the vendor. Who owns accountability? The leader does. And I think most of you know that. Here in the room. And that filter just doesn't apply to organizations. And I want to spend just a couple minutes on children and on our homes. I'm really, really passionate about this topic because I'm watching what's going on. And I talked to some young people along the way, just like you. There's fear, but there's a lot of use. And every generation has technologies that disciple it before parents do. And we're not going to talk about social media. We don't need to. There are other things that have discipled generations and kids before parents truly understood what was going on. And I think AI is one of those technologies. It's shaping how kids learn, how they create, how they ask questions. The risk isn't intelligence. That's not the problem. It's unexamined authority. There is unexamined authority that's happening in our homes and with our children. And we know biblically that the counterfeiter is out to do what? Kill, steal, and destroy. And he works 24/7. If I didn't know who he was, he'd be my number one recruit. He's that good. And I will say he looks at AI as just another great tool in his arsenal to come in very gently and begin to take authority and to begin to shift how our children think. And so I just encourage you, discernment starts with a conversation. That's where discernment begins. And as leaders, as parents, I just encourage you to ask your children how they use AI, not if they do. And I'll give you a conversation starter that I think is really helpful and changes the posture of that conversation. When you use AI, what do you let it do for you? What do you let it do for you? And what do you still do yourself? That question in your conversation, maybe even with your employees, or with your kids, will open a door to a conversation that may surprise you on what they're actually letting it do that they don't even realize. So that is just a little bit about a stewardship filter from a leadership perspective that I encourage you to think about. Again, I have a guide. I'll send it to you. It goes a little deeper than what we have time for here today. But just having the conversations and asking questions and getting your team together to think through it, I think you'll find that it will immerse unveil some fear, some conversations, some questions. And getting the leadership team to agree to certain, hey, this is how we go forward, this is what we want it to do and not what we want it to do. Those are the conversations, at least in my sphere. It may not be yours, because I am not the expert of all experts. I'm just living it over the last 2 to 3 years. But I think you will find that until we as leaders create that room of conversation, that the tools are just being used with unexamined authority. So let's talk some practical stuff. Here's a prompt. We're just going to hit a couple things real quick, and then I want to have some Q&A. This is a prompt that I would encourage you to adopt. You may already do something like this, but I find that these words are missing from a lot of prompts. When I talk to people, I say, well, you know, what have you recently prompted and what were you trying to accomplish? So something a little more strategic, right? Not using it for search on whether Starbucks is open till 10, okay? That's fine, but more strategic. Act as a thoughtful advisor, not a decision maker. Ask clarifying questions before offering recommendations. And then have your, what it is you're seeking the tool to do for you. This, for me, is really helpful because I use ChatGPT as a thinking partner. I use the voice method. I'm sure you guys do too. I walk a lot at night. It's part of my exercise routine. And it's pretty often that I take just a problem or something that I'm thinking through, and with the tool, with my AirPod, while I'm walking, I'm having a conversation. I'm saying, hey, I have this idea, or I have this challenge. This is what I have. I don't want you to make a decision, but I want you to ask me questions that I haven't put forward to you to help me think more deeply about this situation. What am I missing? So that then begins a conversation. And then we get into, well, can you give me some research or some statistics that are sourceable? And so those are the types of conversations I'm having, really, really helpful. And when we treat AI as an advisor, authority stays with the leader, right? And that's one of our number one goals when we're using it. So that's an example. And then the other thing that I would say is research. This was an interesting journey. So 2 years ago, I'm working with our CEO. We put this 60-slide deck. I'm sure you can relate to this 60-slide PowerPoint deck for the board, our new strategic plan. I built the whole front end with a lot of stats, and I'm now new into the ChatGPT space. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is so much better. It's so helpful. I went back to get source data. I went back to get source data, and it wasn't there for some of the things that I had in slides, and we're literally five days away. So it created a lot of work, consternation. I had to change some things, some premises, at least on the front end. And I realized then that was probably my biggest example of, wow, there's real hallucination here. I have to be wiser in how I'm using this powerful tool. And so for me, you may already use Perplexity, but I find Perplexity to be a much better tool when I'm looking for sourced data. They believe in source transparency at Perplexity. ChatGPT does not. You have to ask ChatGPT to give you referenceable, sourceable, linkable, in order for it to give you research that it can prove. Perplexity naturally does that. You almost have to tell it not to do that. And so I find Perplexity to be a much stronger research tool when I'm wanting sourceable, linkable data. Writing's really important. The thing I would say about writing is if you cannot articulate the idea first, then you shouldn't be using the AI tool to do your writing. As leaders, when we wrestle with what we're going to communicate and why we're going to communicate something, that's forming. Do that, then go to the tool to refine. And I do that all the time because it helps me clean things up. But going to it and just saying, hey, write this memo, you can do it. Maybe it's for a simple, very tactical thing, fine. But a leadership communication, make sure you've put in the work up front. So I'm going to pause. I have just some quick closing comments. And one other thing that I think I shared, I call it faithful AI prompting. And so I'll just send this out as well, like on stewardship. What do I still need to read or verify myself? Have the tool hold you accountable. Where is additional context required before acting? Help me refine clarity and structure without changing my intent, like a writing and communication prompt. So powerful. I love it. It's here to stay. It's advancing so fast. I agree with Dan. It's hard to keep up with. But done the right way, we can harness it and still maintain our authority as leaders. Questions? Yes, sir. Okay. Yeah.
One.
Yeah.
And then two, just interested in, okay, now you've got this grace tool, you've gone through these five steps.
Mm-hmm.
What's next for you? Do you see is your emphasis more on continuing to refine grace and enhance that, or are you thinking about other implications of AI? What's next?
Yeah, love the question. And on purpose, I said nothing about referring to grace as a she. And I you caught that. And I'm glad you asked, because internally we even had conversations about that. There were some people that were very moved in the negative, like, it's a tool. I said, so we had to talk through that. But yes, we refer to grace as her because of her name, but we are quick to say she is not human, and even on our site, we say AI agent grace, because we're not trying to fool someone, but because of the name, the tool gets a he or a her. Some people have an issue with that. I personally do not, as long as we're transparent, and we're not trying to act or shadow like this is a human interaction. We have at the bottom a disclaimer that says, Grace is an AI agent, and she will make mistakes and not always be right, essentially. I think we took the copy from Walmart, what Walmart has on their site, and I went to our compliance folks, and I said, hey, if this is good enough for Walmart, are we good? I always run stuff through compliance, legal. I'm a hawk like that, but I also don't think I have to recreate the wheel. So great question. That's our perspective. Grace is moving into our contact center medical record review. So we pull medical records, and we're going to begin using AI to not have to have humans, you know, going through all that. That's a bigger undertaking. And then in our sales process, Grace via API will come over into our Salesforce. We're a Salesforce HubSpot shop. And in Salesforce, predictive analytics, lead scoring. Also, when you're in the application, there's so many opportunities to create efficiency with agent force. But we're blending Grace because she holds our brand. We've pumped sales conversations into her, knowledge base into her, plus the prospect-facing things, and so we've really tried to dial in and even faith-related items so that she can be true. She becomes our North Star as far as voice, and we don't want to rebuild that in Salesforce. And for me, this is me, my opinion, and I've told our CEO, and we've adopted this view, but I don't want this knowledge all built in Salesforce. I want to have control over our voice. But agent force is incredibly powerful, and so we're leveraging that, but we're combining the two in order to create the right conversation and efficiency. So those are some examples. We have a lot of tools in our marketing department that have AI capability to speed up our deployment across multiple platforms, and I'm sure you all are familiar with some of those. Thank you. Yeah.
Data with
Yeah, no, that's a great question. A longer conversation, but on your first part, part A is, you know, a really simple example is integrating her, and you see this in the landscape of business. Contact centers are such a rich field because we want to come in and we want to get the data, and does it really need a human conversation to get my billing information? Connecting her into our back-end systems, we are doing, but that's where governance and security are coming in, and we're actually creating mutually exclusive databases in order to say, okay, Grace, you have access to this, but we're not giving her access over here. And we're doing that in multiple layers, really from a cybersecurity perspective as well. And so that's how we're beginning to use it, but also to protect the organization. But in those conversations, people get into medical things because they're calling about a bill. And the hospital didn't do this, or I got this bill. And so we are in the process of identifying, beyond just the obvious stuff, the next layer, which is strategy discussion. How deep do we allow her to go to educate on a medical code or medical billing? Our provider network, she can get so close, but we're about to open up our provider network to her. So when you come in and talk to Grace, she can recommend a doctor in a certain area based on some behind the scenes data that we use in a different tool. So those are just examples, but once we pierce the veil, now compliance, PHI, all those things from a security perspective are screaming. But you know, the organization sees a path now, because they got comfortable with Grace, and we have other tools internally that are beginning to access that data. So great question. On the latter, I'm happy to talk to you at lunch if you want to go deeper. Yes?
So Grace is an AI agent. What about an AI agent that talks again? So like when we call it Xfinity or Verizon, we can speak with that goofy thing that nobody likes. Do you see Grace to expand on the phone?
Yeah, so great question. In fact, that we held off doing voice with Grace because we really wanted to get the way she works today, like nailed or far enough along. We are in process of adding voice capability to Grace because we have a lot of people that hear our marketing via, could be radio. We're still big in the broadcast space. And we have people who interact with us from their car. And I don't know about you, but I talk to AI more than I type anymore. And I talk to text. That's where things are moving very rapidly. And so we want Grace for people to just be able to have a dialogue. And we also find when people, at least the research would suggest that when you engage AI vocally, you tend to get deeper into a conversation because as a human, you're having a conversation. And so we think it might help people educate better. As far as contact center goes, the voice capability is incredible. Where I get my car serviced, they have an AI agent and it sets the appointment and it's really good. So what we've talked about is there are categories where we would be okay potentially allowing that to happen. But one of the things that we wrestle with is we want to be efficient. And so what are the categories where we just want to make sure the data is available? Either you come in texting or via voice. At the end of every single contact center or sales call or a provider or doctor's office call to our organization, we ask them this question. We say, hey, Dan, Is there anything that I can pray with you or about for you before we get off the call? 95% of our members engage us in that conversation. 70% of our providers, not Christians, allow us to do that. And so that human-centric piece we see as missional to us. And so we believe we will never allow that to like be erased off the board. And we've also put a bright line in, we will not have AI pray or ask someone that question, okay? But we've had that conversation. So that's where we're at in our conversations internally, but I absolutely believe like in a lot of business settings, the capability is getting there. I do some other things with some other partners, and we're looking at implementing that very thing. Yeah, agreed. Well, I know we are at time and I'm eating into your lunch. I just want to leave you with just something really quick. It's really just a charge. You know, we're living in a moment where speed's rewarded, scale is celebrated, efficiency is looked at as a virtue, but scripture reminds us that wisdom is better than speed, stewardship is more faithful than scale, and formation matters more than efficiency. The Apostle Paul puts it this way in 1 Corinthians. He says, all things are lawful, but not all things are helpful. All things are lawful, but not all things build up. Just because something's possible doesn't mean it's beneficial, right? And just because something's permissible doesn't mean that it is formative. AI is going to continue to get more powerful, more capable, more persuasive. We know that. We see it. It's happening before our eyes. But it does not get to determine who we become. And that responsibility still belongs to us as leaders, as parents, as board members, as execs. Authority is not something we outsource. Formation is not something we automate. And stewardship's not something we postpone. So I'll leave you with this charge. Lead with wisdom before speed. Choose stewardship before scale. And I would argue, and maybe most importantly, and care more about formation than efficiency. And because technology will shape the future, but faithful leadership shapes people. And that's what you're doing as faithful leaders. So I encourage you to continue the great work of leading people and glorifying God and our Father in heaven with your gifting. And use AI to be exponential in how you can make an impact for the kingdom. Really appreciate the time today. Thanks.